Welcome to the Miracle Camp podcast, and thanks for checking out this recording from Women's Retreat. Please enjoy listening to our speaker from the weekend.
You all are great singers. It's fun to hear you sing. You all sing good in the shower? Well, I didn't know that. I don't know if I need to picture that, though. I'll just think of this. Let's see. I'm so sorry. I'm such a dummy. I didn't bring my watch or anything. What time are we at, Lindsay? Whatever time I want, you think? Oh, you guys are great. That's for later. There were some questions. I try to have some questions up as you walk in, and tonight they were a little unique, and so I just want to give you some answers to some of those questions if by chance you got to see those. What's more dangerous, collisions with animals on the road or your bathtub? It's your bathtub. If you are 20 or older in the United States, you are 2 times more likely to drown in the bathtub. About 100 people die in collisions with animals annually. Over 300 people die in the bathtub. Who knew? Are you more likely to be killed by a shark or by hemorrhoids? It is. It's hemorrhoids. More than 10 people in the United States die by hemorrhoids, compared to the fewer than 3 on average who die from shark attacks. So, might lose a limb, but you maybe won't lose your life. At what age in the United States does heart attack become the number one cause of death? I thought this was so interesting. For men, it's 45 to 54. For women, it's 75 plus. Not too bad, ladies, not too bad. What is more dangerous, clogged arteries from sitting and eating fatty foods or falling? It's actually falling. 1,000 more people die from falling each year than clogged arteries. How many more years are American women expected to live than men? 5 years, it's just 5, but let's say 12 just for kicks. And then this is icky. What travels quicker, the particles expelled in your sneeze or a pitcher's fastball? It is. Power pitchers can throw fastballs at speeds of 95 to 105 miles per hour. A sneeze can explode, get this, 157 miles per hour. Yuck. So tonight, all of those in some way, shape, or form related to safety, tonight we're talking about God who is safe. Before we get into tonight, I'm going to give you just a little heads up about tomorrow. And I'm trying not to panic. So if you don't panic, I'll just panic for us all. But you'll notice on your breakout sessions that tomorrow we're going to tackle Psalm 119. You guys, that's the longest chapter in the Bible. I don't know how we're going to do it in 20 minutes. I really don't. I'm struggling with it. Yeah, that's totally. So we'll just see what happens. But just that's on your breakout sessions. We'll be doing Psalm 119 tomorrow. November 22nd, 2002, so just a few months ago. This is the day we handed our oldest keys to her new-to-her car. We had long been looking for a car, and though this car was older than what we had wanted for her, it checked all the boxes of longevity and reliability that we had really been looking for, and so in many ways it was perfect. Above all, we just wanted her to be safe, have a safe car to drive in, and we felt like we had done really good due diligence in setting her up for safety. December 7th, 2022 is the day she called to say she was in an accident and her car and the other car that she hit needed serious repair. So weeks after getting her license, giving her the keys, she had an accident. All the discussions and warnings and all the driving practice and time laboring over a car, and she still wasn't safe. Tonight, we are talking about the wisdom, the best beginning point of knowing God alone is safe. The first two psalms we've worked through in these sessions were ones that he had to use to break me, to correct me. But these next two songs, psalms, are the ones that he used to build me, to strengthen me. Yes, it has been intense years, but I can testify to you tonight that he alone is safe. And tomorrow I can tell you for certainty that his word alone sustains, is sufficient, and is satisfying. So that's where we're headed. Tonight we're going to see that there is comfort, rest, and blessings knowing that he alone is safe. Psalm 91 is where we're at. So if you've got your copy of God's word, go ahead and turn there. We're going to get right into it. Psalm 91 verse 1 is emphatic wisdom. It is the declarative theme of this song, psalm. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. Anyone who is seeking wisdom and wanting a solid beginning point, this is it. This is general truth for all. And we know it's generic because of the pronoun he there. This is a universally true statement. And we just need to break this statement down, sink our teeth into it a little bit, because to dwell here means to inhabit, to live, to hunker down in. As a commentator said, this is more than just merely believing God or coming to God occasionally when danger threatens. It means resting in God continually and trusting him at all times. It means living all of life in God. And this shelter word here in the ESV actually just doesn't do it very good justice. There's a secret aspect to it, a place of complete security. You know I like to play games. Did you ever play the game Sardines growing up? Anybody know what I'm talking about when I say that? So we had a older couple in our church who would volunteer, which is so gracious, to watch our kids when they were little. It was amazing. And they didn't just watch our kids. Like, they played with our kids. And 9 times out of 10, they played Sardines with our kids. So my brain, when I was thinking of this psalm, all I could think was the game Sardines. So we're going to roll with this example tonight of Sardines. In case you've never played Sardines, it's very similar to hide and seek, except a little bit opposite. So in hide and seek, there is lots of hiders and one seeker. In Sardines, there is one hider and lots of seekers. And whenever you find the hider, you don't say anything and you just hide with that hider. And then the next person finds the hider. And then you go until somebody is the last one. And then that's the loser. So what we're seeing in verse 1, where it says to dwell in the shelter, is almost as if God is saying, come here. Come to the most totally secure spot. And it's me in childlike glee saying, woohoo, because I know that I found it and that I have won the game and I get to stay there till the end. This is what it means to dwell in the shelter. And I do just need to note here, I guess this is where the illustration breaks down a little bit. God doesn't keep the spot secret. God has made himself fully known. He has fully revealed himself, but not everyone has found him. So when we say this sheltering spot or this secretness to it, it's not necessarily that the spot is hidden. It's that you as the person are hiding yourself in the spot. Okay? And if you habitually reside there, as Charles Spurgeon said it, in that spot, there's even more to it. Because if you truly dwell in the shelter of the Most High, you will also be abiding in the shadow of the Almighty. This abide here means to stop and pass the night. For several years, Jonathan and I lived in Louisville, Kentucky while he was going through seminary. Now, growing up in Illinois, I always called sleepovers, sleepovers. It's just what you did. You just slept over. But I remember being caught off guard in Kentucky because in Louisville, people would say, are they going to stay the night? Are you staying the night? And they would say this staying the night as if it had nothing to do with sleep, and it was just staying this night. And this is what this word means. It means that you're not just doing the normal thing of sleeping. You are literally staying there, residing there. That's what that abide is. So he who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide and stay in the shadow. Have you ever tried to walk in someone's shadow? Again, this is kind of a childlike thing that comes to mind. But to be in somebody's shadow, you have got to be up close and personal. It requires getting really close and squishy. You're not in the same space. You are smack dab cuddled up in there. I hope you are getting this vivid picture of what it is. Dwelling in this spot with the Most High, and you get to remain in the shadow of the Almighty. And we don't want to rush past those descriptive words, Most High and Almighty. This isn't just some random person you're next to. This isn't some mere human being. This is the Almighty, the most powerful Shaddai God. These names should invoke such great confidence. Now, this is going to be a little bit unique. Tonight, we're going to need some audience participation, not just from my friend here, but also from you. So just be prepared. I'm giving you a fair warning. But Darla, this is my friend Darla. Hi, Darla. She's my friend for right now. No, Darla, you're going to be for always. Darla is going to give us, again, a solid image in our brains of what we're talking about here. So when we say verse 1, he who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty, we want to think about that like this box, right? It's this great spot, and Darla's going to go ahead and dwell in there. So you just go on in there, dear Darla. You got it. Did she do it? Oh, you don't have to close it up, my friend. Don't do that. So Darla is in there. She's so awesome. Isn't she the best? I'm so thankful for Darla. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. And I don't know if you can see, there are shadows in there. She's in tucked in that shadow. So hopefully that gives you a visual of what this is like. And this truth of being in this is such a great beginning point for wisdom. Starting here and reciting that general truth, he who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. We're going to say that together, okay? It is going to be on the screen, I believe. Yeah, here it is. Yay. All right, so let's say this general truth together. It's so beautiful. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. It is beautiful. General wisdom truth right there. And we're just getting started. Verse 1 is the general truth. Verse 2, it's declared personally. Look at verse 2. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. So we know the thematic wisdom is that he who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. We've got that, but then now we've got in verse 2 a personal account of someone who's done just that. They've found the spot. They have won the game by being here. My fortress, my refuge, my God in whom I trust, my refuge, my literal shelter here, my fortress, my impenetrable stronghold. You're good, Darla. My God, my Elohim, this is relational. He is mine. This is who I trust. This is declaring it aloud that we are dwelling like what we're talking about in verse 1, and that it is true and it is personal. The individual has found the spot. They are residing there. They are staying with the Most High, with the Almighty. And it's almost like they get so giddy, they just got to say it, that it's true for me, that they've won the game. And so again, just put this in your mind. So Darla, here you go, friend. You're almost done, dear. I want you to repeat after me, Darla, please. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. Thank you. Now you can get out of the box, dear. Such a good sport. Thank you, Darla. Are we friends? Yeah. Now, if you've made the Most High your shelter, if you are dwelling in there, that means just residing there, habitually residing there. If you are abiding, staying in the shadow of the Almighty, then you can think about yourself in that box, declaring verse 2 as well. Now, we can't all crawl into this box, but I want you to just take a moment and I want you to picture yourself in that box. And if you can say that you are dwelling there, I want us to together declare aloud this personal statement. So again, let's read this together. I will say to the Lord, my refuge and my fortress, my God in whom I trust. And what follows after the personal statement of verse 3 comes verses 3 through 15. Through 16, where the pronouns are going to change again. We went from the generic universal he in verse 1 to the personal I in verse 2, and now we're starting in verse 3 with the you. Again, you remember that game of sardines I talked about? Here's this awesome, incredible hiding spot you can have with the Most High, the Almighty, and you found it. You're inside, you're right next to him, super close, so confident that you say verse 2, and now guess what? Another seeker has found that spot too, and they are hiding with you. So think of as if, now I didn't get a big enough box, but think as if there's now two people or more stuck in this box, dwelling there, and you just kind of lean over to your fellow hiding buddy, and you just remind them of this really good truth. In verses 3 through 13, to bolster up your buddy, to encourage them that we found the best spot ever. So we're going to take these next 3 through 13 in three sections, that you are safe from everything, verses 3 through 8, that you are safe for always, verses 9 through 10, and you are safe by his own hand, verses 11 through 13. So safe from everything, look at verse 3. For he will deliver you from the snare of the fowler and from deadly pestilence. He's going to deliver you from the known and the unknown. First, the unknown, the cleverly laid trap, that subtly enticing trap of someone looking to stealthily capture you. The snare of the fowler, the unknown. You are safe from the unknowns when you are dwelling in the shelter of the Most High and abiding in the shadow of the Almighty. And then you, the threat of destruction of disease in this verse, that deadly pestilence, you are safe from something you're even aware of. You are safe from the knowns. And why? Well, because of verse 4, he's got you. He will cover you with his pinions, and under his wings you will find refuge. His faithfulness is like a shield and a buckler. He will gently cover you like a mama bird. And here's a little image of it. You are safe because you are under his wing, gently covered as a mama bird covers her young. But not just the gentle covering. You are also steadfastly protected. He is gently covering you like a mama bird, but his faithfulness is a shield and buckler, steadfastly protecting you. And when I looked up buckler, it said bulwark. And I've sung bulwark several times, but I couldn't tell you what a bulwark is, so I had to look that up too. So I looked up bulwark, and here's an image of what a bulwark is. It really is a fortress on all sides. You can't get in. So when it says that his faithfulness is a shield and a buckler, he is steadfastly protecting you. He is a defense on all sides. He is gently covering you, like that mama, right alongside that buckler that's steadfastly protecting you. Then verses 5-6. You will not need to fear the terror of the night, nor the arrow that flies by day, nor the pestilence that stalks in the darkness, nor the destruction that wastes at noonday. You will never need to fear whether day or night, mind or body. These are great contrasts in these verses. We've got day and night, noonday and darkness. We've got terror, which is an internal struggle, and the arrow outside, the outside body struggle. Disease, or probably more accurately here, the plague that stalks. Again, it's something that wreaks havoc on your mind, nor the destruction that wastes or ruins your body. It doesn't matter. You don't need to fear whether day or night, mind or body, if you are in this box. Look at verses 7-8. 1,000 may fall at your side, 10,000 at your right hand, but it will not come near you. You will only look with your eyes and see the recompense of the wicked. Even if thousands fall, even 10,000, even if the extent of the trouble is so vast, so sweeping that it feels everywhere inescapable, simply look and see. Total destruction is reserved for the wicked. No matter the extent, you will simply look and see total destruction is not for you. From these verses, you are safe from everything. So we've established you are safe from everything, the knowns, the unknowns, day, night, mind, body, no matter the extent of the calamity. You are safe from everything because you are safe for always, verses 9-10. Because you have made the Lord your dwelling place, the Most High, who is my refuge, no evil shall be allowed to befall you. No plague shall come near your tent. This is a reminder of verses 1 and 2. Remember, we're not just talking about believing in God or coming to him occasionally. We are talking about dwelling there. And we need to make sure that that's what we're checking, that we are dwelling there. Because as Tim Keller said, if anything is more important than God, if one of those things is threatened or disaster comes to it, you will melt down and it will expose where you are truly sheltering in. So we affirm in these verses that we are unfazed whatever happens because we are sheltering where we are safe for always. So we basically can read these verses like this. Again, think of that person tapping that other friend on the shoulder. When you've made the Lord your dwelling place, me too, by the way, nothing will ever even come close to you, verse 10. There's no limit or flaw to his protection. There's no way anything can come even near. You are safe for always. You are safe from everything because you are safe for always. Because you are safe by his own hand. That four in verse 11 is going to transition us to the safe by his own hand section, verses 11-13. For he will command his angels concerning you to guard you in all your ways. On their hands they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against the stone. You will tread on the lion and the adder. For the young lion and the serpent you will trample underfoot. You are safe for always because he will even command his angels concerning you. Dwelling in him not only includes him, but his legions of angels. They carry you, and it will go beyond just surviving something, but you will be victorious. The animals named here, cobra and lion, these are creatures who seem incredibly deadly, unbelievable for any human to go against. Those will become totally defeatable things. You'll be able to do the impossible with him. You can have victory against the impossible through him. You are safe by his own hand. And so just as we declared that personally, we're going to partner up with someone near you. And this time I will read the words and you can repeat them so that you're not having to always look at the screens. Because this is what this psalm is really intending. That we encourage our fellow hiding buddies with these words. We may not know all the ways that we need to encourage each other with these words, but we're going to speak these words of encouragement to each other tonight. So again, you can pair up or get in a group of two or three or just somebody sitting next to you, and I'm going to help you. Again, you can repeat after me. Would you say, please? We'll go to the very first slide. Thank you. Here we go. Just repeat after me. He will deliver you from the known and unknowns. He will gently cover you and steadfastly protect you. You will never need to fear, whether day or night, mind or body, no matter the extent, you will simply look and see that total destruction isn't for you. You are safe from everything. Keep going. You have made the Lord your dwelling place. Me too. So nothing will ever even come close to you. You are safe for always. For he commands his angels concerning you. They carry you. He makes it possible for you to do the impossible. And you will have victory. You are safe by his own hand. Now we got to interrupt the lesson because this all sounds so awesome. Like we are safe from everything, safe for always, safe by his own hand. And if we're not careful, we're going to read these verses and completely take them out of context of the entirety of the Bible. Without careful understanding, we could read this and believe that if we trust God, no bad things will ever happen to us. Or the reverse, that if bad things do happen to us, we either don't trust God or can't trust God. But the wisdom of this psalms isn't that I am safe. The wisdom of this psalm is that he alone is safe. Yet I'm so tempted to believe that I should be safe. That suffering isn't or shouldn't be part of my story. And in fact, this is the temptation that Satan, we know with certainty, used. The only verse of scripture actually quoted by Satan. Hang on. The only verse of that we know that he said is in Matthew 4. Matthew 5. Huh? Thank you. Just going to check and see if maybe my page. I might go get my phone so I can find it. The only verse quoted by him is Matthew. Let me switch over to it. Matthew 4. 5 through 6, let me read this. Then the devil took him up to the holy city and set him on the pinnacle of the temple. And he said to him, if you are the Son of God, throw yourself down, for it is written, he will command his angels concerning you. And on their hands they will bear you up, lest you strike your foot against the stone. Jesus faced this exact same temptation. Give me 2 seconds. There we go. Jesus faced this exact same temptation. And if you notice, even as we read in there, that Satan doesn't quote the verses perfectly. In his temptation of Jesus, he's tempting him with no suffering, though. Surely that's what Psalm 91 means. That if something bad ever did happen to us, there's no reason to trust God. But Jesus responded because he knows the entire canon of Scripture. And he knows it perfectly, unlike Satan. And in the face of this temptation, he quoted Deuteronomy 6:16. So let's just look at Matthew 4:7, where Jesus is quoting. Jesus said to him, "Again it is written, you shall not put the Lord your God to the test." He knew that testing God would be the opposite of trusting God. Testing God isn't trusting God. Testing God says, nothing bad will ever happen to me. Trusting God says, when something bad happens to me, I am safe in him. Now, of course, Jesus has taught us to do that perfectly, but to add more fuel to the fire, that this is not what Psalm 91 is trying to say, that we are safe from any trouble. Look back at Psalm 91 now. Verse 15, it says right in there, because he holds fast to me in love, I will deliver him. I will protect him. Nope, I'm reading the wrong verse. 15, when he calls to me, I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. It's not that there's an absence of trouble. It's that God will be with you. There's the promise of his presence in the trouble. And above all, if we look at Psalms in light of Jesus, we're going to see that God's protection doesn't mean the absence of trouble or suffering. God certainly protected Jesus time and time again. The Jewish religious leaders started trying to kill Jesus in John 5:16, less than a year and a half into his ministry. He is yet preserved from being thrown off a cliff in Luke 4:29, so God is continuing to keep him safe. God continues to keep him safe from arrest in John 7:45-52 and 10:39. God keeps him safe from stoning in John 8:59. God protects Jesus. He is keeping him safe until he didn't. Because in the end, Jesus was arrested, falsely accused, beaten and mocked, brutally executed by means of the crucifixion. So if we are saying that someone who is dwelling with God, so close to God that they're in his shadow, would never experience suffering, then how can we possibly comprehend what happened to Jesus? He who himself was God. You can't get any closer to the shadow than that. Our God experienced trouble and suffering. So it cannot be that we read Psalm 91 and say that that will not happen to me who is hiding myself in Christ. It's in fact because he did allow his son to suffer that we can read this psalm with even greater understanding, with even greater understanding than the person who wrote it or any of those who read it before Jesus's death and resurrection. Because we know that ultimately the greatest suffering, the greatest trouble, the worst circumstances, the most horrific fate that we could ever face, that is eternal separation from God, lost to a sin state forever. That has been taken care of. He alone is safe because of the lengths that he went to protect us. He made himself killable. He took our punishment, shielding and protecting us from spending eternity lost without him. So that means, as Tim Keller said, the only debt that can truly destroy me has been paid. The only disease that can kill me eternally has been defeated. Whatever you think of facing that sounds scary or overwhelming or unimaginable, what you needed protection from has already been covered. Verse 13 of this psalm, where it says that lion and that snake, well, we remember that that roaring lion, 1 Peter 5:8, and that ancient serpent, Revelation 12:9, have been defeated. The victory has been won. And so I'm just going to repeat the words that we said to our fellow hiding buddy. And I want us to listen to them this time and think about Jesus. Because these verses are true because of what he has done. Keeping us safe from the thing that we needed to be safe from most. He will deliver you from the known and unknown, from the sin that you're aware of and the sin that you're not even aware of. He will gently cover you and steadfastly protect you. You will never need to fear, whether day or night, mind or body, no matter the extent, you will simply look and see that total destruction, eternity without God, isn't for you. You are safe from everything that ultimately matters. You have made the Lord your dwelling place. Me too. So nothing that is the ultimate evil will ever even come close to you. You are safe for always. You can never be plucked from his hand. For he commands his angels concerning you. They carry you. He makes it possible for you to do the impossible. Have a relationship with the most holy God as a sinful human. And you will do that because he had the victory. You are safe by his own hand. So we know that nothing ultimately can hurt us because Jesus has taken care of the greatest trouble that we could ever face. But the reality is life is still hard. We go through pandemics, grandpas die, mother-in-laws get diagnosed with ALS. Life is hard and life is heavy. And so to give us even more, he who is safe now speaks. Because he knows that while we can speak to him, and while we can speak to each other, the best word of encouragement comes from him alone. Verses 3 through 13 remind us that we are ultimately and eternally safe. But verses 14 through 16, God confirms that we are safe for the here and now too. This is as if the Most High, the dwelling of God, puts his arms around you in that box and just speaks to you. He affirms what he says is true. Look at verses 14 through 16. Because he holds fast to me in love, I will deliver him. I will protect him because he knows my name. When he calls to me, I will answer him. I will be with him in trouble. I will rescue him and honor him. With long life, I will satisfy him and show him my salvation. God declares that he indeed does what the psalm says he does. He puts his arm around you and speaks to the people in the hiding spot. And I just love these verses. First, we see again that he does what he said he's going to do, but we also are doing what we've said we've done. So remember, in verse 2, we are declaring aloud that I am dwelling there, that you are my rock. We've got to be doing that. Look in these verses. It talks about what we do, that we are actually doing what we've said we're going to do. We hold fast to him. We know his name. We call to him. In other words, we are in real abiding relationship with him. We have made him our living, our being. We are in his shadow. My son, Job, gave me a beautiful picture of this when he was just a little itty bitty. I don't remember everything about my kids when they were little, and I'm sad to admit that I've forgotten more than I remember. But when my son, my only son, was a toddler, he said something so profound that I actually started working on a song for it because I loved it so much. I love my son, and my son loves his mama, and we've been in close relationship ever since that kid popped out. As a toddler, barely speaking, just putting some words together, he would come up to me with his blankie in tow, and he would raise his chubby baby arms, and he would say, "Hold you?" Yeah, it makes me tear up even thinking about it. He never said, "Hold me." He always said, "Hold you." And here's why I found it so profound, and no doubt, and he had no idea what he was saying to me, but the Lord used it from the mouths of babes. The Lord used it to just remind me of his character. Job was confident that I was going to hold him, that I would always hold him, that that would always be my response to him, that I was doing that. So he didn't ask, "Hold me," as if I would hold him. He asked if he could hold on to me. And so what we see in these picture, in this perfect picture of these verses, God is always holding on to us. It isn't that we go to God and say, "Hold me." God's holding us. We go to him and say, "Hold you. I need to hold on to you." We need to be doing what we said we were going to do in verse 2. So we declared it personally in verse 2, and now we see in verses 14 through 16, we're actually living it. We're doing it. We're holding fast to him because we're the ones who need to hold to him. But God does what he also says he's going to do. And look at what he says he does. "I will deliver him. I will protect him. I will answer him. I will be with him. I will rescue and honor him. I will satisfy him and show him my salvation." Commentator David Guzik recalls these verses like this: "This is the blessing of his presence. I will be with you in trouble. The blessing of his protection. I will deliver you. The blessing of his promotion. I will honor you. The blessing of his prosperity. With long life, I will satisfy you, everlasting life. The blessing of his preservation and show you my salvation." This is what he says to those who are hiding in him. "He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty." And so as we close, I would love for you to just close your eyes and let me speak these words. I am not him. But let me speak these words over your soul. Whatever you are facing, take heart. I give you the blessing of my presence. I will be with you in trouble. I give you the blessing of my protection. I will deliver you. I give you the blessing of my promotion. I will honor you. I give you the blessing of my prosperity. With long life, everlasting life, I will satisfy you. I give you the blessing of my preservation, and I'll show you my ultimate salvation. He who dwells in the shelter of the Most High will abide in the shadow of the Almighty. Sheltering in him means safety forever because he alone is safe. Let's pray.
Thanks for listening to this chapel session and for diving into scripture with us. We hope you have been encouraged in your walk with Jesus, and we hope to see you here at camp for next year's women's retreat. So thanks again, and have a great day.